Hey, and welcome to the latest issue of the Three Old Geeks podcast. I am joined once again by a gang of donut-sucking freaks. And I'm not going to call him...
Jelly-sucking freaks.
I'm not going to call him a very special guest anymore because he's here every other week. First of all, the Ruinator, the Contrarian, and yes, you are the Ruinator again. The Keeper of the Inner Sanctum and the Numbers Guy, Keith of Keith's Comics. Keith, how are you?
What, I'm the Ruinator again?
Yes, you were just...
I don't think so.
Yes.
I don't think so.
And of course, the man who's always wrong and with a hole in his collection, in some of his collections, the Clown Prince of Collecting, the Pictures Guy in the Dirty Old Gate. Brian needs one. Brian, how are you?
You know, I was going to use the line, your mouth would make a very interesting urinal. And then I thought that would be rude, so I don't want to use it. So I'm not going to.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, thank you for your good taste in this, man.
Well, can't see all the viewers' mouths, so it'd be a falsity.
Well, no, I was just going to say Lance.
Oh, Lance, okay.
Lance.
Okay, there you go. Well, okay, then go ahead.
I see.
Then go ahead.
That's
totally free to do it now.
No, because I thought he would laugh because I was using a line from the movie.
Oh, that wasn't just a thought you had?
And, of course, our favorite glutton for punishment, our returning champion and the kindest man that we know, Superfan Mike. Mike, how are you?
Looking forward to this one.
Well, at least somebody is, because I ain't. Yeah. I'm, of course, the long-suffering world's oldest kid sidekick. I am the words guy. My name is Lance, and gentlemen, I have one question for you. Will you dance for me? And welcome to another issue. All right, this podcast is already a tragedy. A little BTS for you listeners out there, because Brian's been singing a Bee Gees in falsetto for like the entire morning, and it's getting on my nerves.
Tragedy!
So Brian, could you please offer some news that is not a tragedy?
So no Star Wars news.
Oh, why? What? What? You know what I just heard? I just heard, and I'm excited about. Daisy Ridley is not going to be the main focus of the Star Wars film.
I'm actually surprised she's in it, to be perfectly honest with you, because everything else I've seen her in, she's actually good. And I was not impressed with her in any of the.
I would like her to be good. I would like to like the character of Rey. I really would. I think that they absolutely fucked her up, but.
Brian, to use the term that you've used for 152 episodes, she's Mary Sue.
Yes.
And it's hard to get behind her.
Yes.
But
yes.
Who in those three movies was good at all?
You know what? I really liked.
BB-8, I know.
No, who was the old woman with the big eyes?
Oh, glasses? The Yoda villain?
Yeah, no, the one in the bar.
Yeah. I didn't like her.
Oh, I liked her.
Yeah, I liked her. Nwango voiced her or whatever. She was like a Yoda.
Boingo Boinger? What?
Oh, dude, shut up.
So again, what? Nobody in those three movies was actually good other than Harry Carey lookalike.
Okay. They also, Gwendolyn Christie as Captain Phasma when she was in it for like 2 minutes was good.
Okay, that's going back to, hey, Darth Maul was cool and then died.
Yeah. So, yeah.
But they also just fired the writer for that film. So we'll see where that goes. Which may be why now Daisy Ridley is a supporting character and not the main character.
Just a regular sort of Star Wars story. Okay, got it.
Yeah, we'll see if that film even gets made. How many films have they canceled? We'll see. We got Young Comic Book Day. We got comic books for the young coming out. Free Comic Book Day next week, Saturday, so that'll be before we...
So Keith will be exhausted on Sunday.
Yeah, so I'll be calm and cool, and I'll be a supportive person.
But I'm helping out this year, so...
You're helping out.
I'm helping out.
I'm going to have a big batch of red vines sitting out here to keep them awake.
Isn't the whole process to get kids into comics with the Free Comic Book Day? Isn't that the whole...
He's very kid-friendly.
He's going to scare them away.
No.
Yes.
Look at this one. Look at her boobs.
You're going to get a lawsuit,
Keith. It's a cautionary tale. Don't become like him, Reed.
You'll get fired if you become like him.
The peanut gallery shoots.
So if you want to meet two of the old geeks for Free Comic Book Day, come down to Keith's. We'll be here.
Well, and Mike will probably be in sometime that day.
Yeah.
No?
I hope so. Okay. Later, I hope. Not in the morning, but I hope to be here later.
So we'll be Lanceless, but other than that.
Because I can only take you guys one day a week. What else you got, Brian?
We do have, we had a couple of big passings. The first one being Harry Belafonte. And for those of you who are Beetlejuice fans, which should be everybody who listens to us, and if you haven't seen the film, please, please
turn this podcast off and watch it now.
And go watch it.
And
yeah.
Jump in line.
For Dale. Me say day, me say day, me say day, me say day. Daylight, go, man.
Better than
me
tragedy.
One, go home.
They got jump in line. Barely. Too. They did jump in line.
Yeah, they did jump in the line.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was very excited, though. I don't know how that one goes, so I can't come up with it right now. But everybody knows, Dale. Me say day, me say day, me say day. 6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot, bunch! Daylight, go, man, me one go home.
Okay, yeah, this has been...
You want to go home now?
This is our musical special.
Oh, my God, you got to have...
Can people who don't like musical specials leave?
No, they have to join in.
So, but he really was a neat man. My mom ran into him at a restaurant, and very nice. That would have been in the 70s. And the other being
the
king of schlock.
Yeah, the contributor to the downfall of modern society. One of the contributors to the downfall.
Jerry Springer. He made TV what it is today.
Jerry Springer.
We will get even with him eventually.
You know what? He seemed like a really nice guy. Whenever you watched
interviews
with
him. Right now.
He just laughed at what he created.
He's having a conversation with Hitler and the devil.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. Whoa. Whoa!
That was dark.
Yes.
That was really dark, Keith.
Because, no, I'm not even going to make that
joke.
I just wanted to say, guys, got the DNA test to see if he really is the father.
Why me? All right, so for this week's edition... of the world famous, and I have the data to prove it, Thrilled Geeks Top 3 list with 20 minutes on the timer to accommodate our special guest, Mike. Gentlemen, what are your top 3 favorite vampires? Because it has nothing to do with that fucking shit movie that we watched this week.
Are we excluding Bela Lugosi?
Yes.
I think we should.
Bela Lugosi is low-hanging fruit.
Oh, God, yes.
Okay, just making
so
sure.
So is Christopher Lee.
And yeah, Christopher Lee and all the Hammer guys. So anything but those guys. And go!
Okay, so number one for me.
Number one or number three?
Number three.
You don't let the guest go first?
No,
he always goes first.
I always go first. I think. What the fuck is wrong with you?
I've
seen your list.
It's a well-established, he's an inconsiderate bastard, so Brian
goes
first.
Jesus Christ, man. God, Brian's inconsiderate. He says it right at the beginning.
Brian goes sweet.
Mine, number three, is... the Max Schreck Nosferatu.
You bastard. You son of a bitch.
Yeah. What?
That was probably his number.
That was my number three.
You can do the William Dafoe version.
Okay, well, I was going to go into the whole Shadow of the Vampire, William Dafoe as Max Schreck, as a real vampire was fucking great.
That's your number three?
Fucking great.
That's your number three?
That's my number three.
Wow.
That's my number three. And why becomes a little more clear as we go through. But yeah, my number three. That scared the hell out of me as a kid. Just the one where he's going up the stairs.
And
the hand.
And the shadow. Yeah.
Oh, so well done.
Silent film, black and white, really cool cinematography for the time. And then you've got the whole contribution of, you've got Malkovich as Murno and William Dafoe. Who's just crazy William Dafoe, awesome.
As Max Schreck.
As Max Schreck.
The real vampire.
Yeah. Because Max Schreck only made, that's the only movie he ever made.
Yes. Yes. So,
wow.
Mike, what's your number three?
I can't believe it's number three.
So I went in a different direction. Brian, how many old geeks do we have
you
here?
Son of a...
It looks like four old geeks.
Mom count.
Mom count. The count that taught every one of our age when we were young how to count to 10 or 20.
My second vampire ever.
Oh, man. That's great. I didn't even think of him. That's great.
Just, I'm going to, everybody's just going to steal mine, so I'm going
to
shut up.
Do you want to go next? You can get one in before I steal.
No, because now I got to look this one up.
Okay, wow. I'm going to go with my first vampire. My little vampire. No,
Bunnicula.
No.
No?
1,225 episodes of Dark Shadows taught me Barnabas
Collins.
My very first vampire. My first memory of a vampire.
Yes.
I obviously didn't watch all the episodes, but I remember seeing that. It was a cool show, and he was a cool vampire. So.
Yeah.
I'm actually tempted because there's like so many episodes of that. I really want to start watching that, but it's like...
It's a commitment. And I have all the books.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I have all the original books and novels that have been reprinting them, so I'm buying the other one. So
how many seasons was that?
It was like the 60s through the 70s or whatever.
It was like for 10 years, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
All right.
With Quentin and... Yeah.
Since my number three and my backup number three were both stolen...
I didn't steal anything.
Have you guys ever seen What We Do in the Shadows?
Yes.
Yes.
I have not watched it.
Okay, so it's
made by the guy who
I've
Thor.
Seen the commercials.
You got to check it out.
It's fucking hysterical.
Which one did you pick?
I'm going to go with the dark horse out of all of them, and that's Colin Robinson. Because he's the energy vampire, and the way that they do him is he is the fucking troll in every office, the guy who bored, like he starts talking about shit that nobody cares about. He literally drains the life from you by just being a boring fucking twit. And I just think that is one of the most brilliant portrayals of any vampire whatsoever. Because I have, Keith, you've never worked in an office, you would have no idea. It's
right,
a brilliant
trope. No one like that comes in here ever.
That's your base.
Yeah, really. That is your customer base, isn't it?
Your
fucking
face. Oh, Jesus Christ.
So what is your number two there?
So my number two, I thought it was Blade. It's what I like is when people take an old concept, and vampires are an old concept, and add a twist to them.
He's going to go Twilight. Watch.
They sparkle. I love that they sparkle with sunlight. That was so beautiful. I can't. No.
Don't hold yourself.
Oh my God. That was beautiful.
Yeah, I know that's your number one. Go to your number two.
Blade 2. The vampires, the bad vampires, and I think it was Blade 2 with the mouth.
Oh, dude, yeah, Guillermo del Toro, the Reapers or the Reavers or whatever.
Yeah, the Reapers.
That was my number two. Was actually the Dominic Purcell character.
That just to me when that first and how fucking wicked they are. I mean, just brutal. That was cool.
The fight between Blade and the main Reaper vampire was one of the best, and it was like late 90s or whatever, was the one of the best and one of the first really good superhero or like superpower fights ever.
Isn't that the one Triple H is the vampire?
No, that's the third one.
That's the third one.
That's,
yeah.
That's got
Ryan Reynolds in it.
Ryan Reynolds is Hannibal King.
And Jessica Biel.
And Jessica Biel, yeah.
And that's the one where everybody says...
Whoever she wants to be. Whoever she wants to be ever.
And it's got Parker Posey.
Yep. But it was Blade 2 with those at the introduction of those. It hit me the same way as Zack Snyder's zombie, the little girl, when she fucking bops up.
Yeah.
And you're like, what? And then all of a sudden she comes flying down the hall and you're like, these aren't zombies. That was cool. Yeah. It was that same kind of, oh, this is different. Okay. I'm here now. I'm present.
Good to have you. Mike, you're number two.
Well, I had that, so I'm going to change it and go with my backup number two, which is a direct result of listening to this podcast,
ooh,
which is the vampire from Penny Dreadful.
Oh, thank God.
Oh,
So
I thought you could steal mine.
No, I like the way that vampire was, the way he, you know, it was old time. He was treating the way he treated his subjects. It was a little bit different than what I expected it to be. It wasn't the old, you know, cape and everything. He was the manipulator behind the scenes, kind of. So I'm going to go with the vampire from Penny Dreadful.
Okay. Do you want to continue to go?
No, go ahead.
My number two is direct result from this podcast, too. Well, not really, because I'd seen it before. It's a different kind of vampire. It's a space vampire. Matilda May's character in Life Force.
Yes. I thought about that.
Didn't have a name.
So I didn't need one.
Yeah, but yeah, that's very much a Brian vampire.
Yes. Yes. Now that...
That's a life suck.
Yeah. That. And not gratuitous either.
No.
No, not gratuitous. It contributed to the story.
Yeah.
Her being naked the entire time.
Yeah. Yes.
But that was a good nudity.
That
made me think that was on my also mention, but after hearing about the movie we watch, I'm like, yeah, we need a
happy cleanser.
Yeah. Palate cleanser. A visual cleanser.
All right, my next two are ensemble casts, and I'm literally picking my favorite out of the group of vampires.
Oh.
So the second greatest vampire movie ever is Near Dark. It is the most practical vampires. They don't have fangs. It's pretty much they drink blood, and they are allergic to sunlight, and that's about it.
Bill Paxton's character, right?
Severin,
that's his name. I couldn't think of it. Yes.
Damn it, I hate it when they don't shave. Yeah. And literally either put, like,
bar fight, Tien?
The bar fight.
Oh, God.
He's got the spurs on his boots,
and
he fucking kicks the guy's throat open, starts drinking his blood.
I gotta see this.
You've never seen it, dude. Lance Hendrickson's the leader. Hey, I fought for the South, boy.
I have the DVD.
It is the most practical vampire movie ever, and it's Catherine Bigelow's the director. At the same time, they were shooting Aliens, so there's a lot of crossover. You know, like Bill Paxton and Lance Hendrickson, and
Near
I forget
Dark?
Who Vasquez is, but
Near
Vasquez
Dark.
Is
yeah,
the
yeah.
woman.
Near
but
Near Dark,
Near Dark, and it is absolutely. Right in the wheelhouse for me. Great stuff.
Wow.
And Lance Hendrickson is a close second.
That was one.
And that's got the really creepy kid in it, you know, where he's like, you know, 100 years old or whatever.
Yeah. Much better than Kirsten Dunst. Yes.
What's your number one, Brian?
You say Kirsten Dunst from the stat.
Kirsten Dunst from Interview with a
Vampire. No, mine, again, I love the different takes. If you take a different take on a classic character, a classic genre, and spin it. And sticking with Guillermo del Toro, The Strain. If you have not seen the TV show.
I have not.
Seen the first season. I read the first book. The guy who... is sort of like Marilyn Manson, like he's like the rock star, and like things literally start falling off of him, and he gets like all creepy. Yeah, that was some cool shit.
Yeah, the whole gas station scene, and I think it was the first. It's either the first episode or first season.
It's more. That's almost like vampires. Like it's like the.
It's a virus.
It's a virus, and like the vampires are almost like a zombie horde or something like that. It's completely out of control and stuff like that. Yeah, that's some good stuff.
It's way different, and that I liked. But it's still vampires.
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 Yeah, and that's like it's almost like a, like a parasite.
Yes.
It's like an FX show, isn't it?
FX? Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah, really good. Now you got a couple to watch.
Yeah.
That's exciting for you.
My number one, I went had to get a palate cleanser too for a sexy vampire after the blood sucking freaks are so ugly. So I went to Celine from Underworld.
Okay.
So the trilogy movies, Underworld, Vampires Against
Werewolves.
So I mean, she's in tight black leather.
Yes, with guns. Yes.
So, okay, down, Lance, down. Oh my god.
It was tied between that and
that was almost as creepy as
It was
Bloodsucking Freaks.
It was tied between that and Selma Hayek and From Dusk
Till
Dawn.
Oh my God! Oh my God!
But
yes.
But there's three movies with Celine in it with Kate Beckinsale. So I picked
Beckinsale.
It.
I could not remember her name, and all I kept thinking about was Pearl Harbor. That
yes.
Was.
Yes. And that too.
My brain was spinning on that. Okay. Yes. But oh, Selma Hayek. Wow. Wowza.
What did you
number? You go number one.
I'm number one.
Because I know what your number one is.
You don't know what
I know what it is.
Dude.
Oh.
It's changed like three times since we started this bloody thing. Get it bloody? horrible. actually, my number one, I'm a Dr. Richard.
Oh.
I was going to Lance and Dr. Richard, but it was...
I was just going to take the entire vampire community.
I love pretty much all the vampires that were Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I knew it.
If you go, you know, Angel, Spike, Drusilla.
Love Drusilla.
Harmony. Then you go to the movie, you got, what is it, Lothar, or what was...
I think it was Lothar was...
Lothus was Rutger Hauer.
Rutger Hauer, and then Pee Wee Herman was his sidekick.
Yeah, Alwyn or something weird like that. Yeah. And then you got even Luke, the Brian Thompson character from Buffy. I just love the way they did vampires in that.
Yeah.
So it's...
Was that the first one where they when you stuck them, they turned into ash
dust,
or whatever?
Yes.
Yeah. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, so that was my number one.
The whole mythology of Buffy
was
really cool.
Yes.
Again, turning that whole thing on its
head. Master. I forgot the Master.
Metcalf. Yeah. Niedermeyer.
Mark Metcalf. Yeah. We're not going to stake it.
Man, you are on fire today. You are on fire.
Like a vampire in sunlight.
Oh, my God. Like, yes.
All right.
Fuck, they hate you.
So... This movie came out, and my senior year of high school, I dressed like this guy the entire time. I had the coat. I had the haircut.
Oh, my God. I know who he is.
I know.
David from The Lost Boys.
Kiefer Sutherland.
Kiefer Sutherland when he was 20 years old.
Can you picture him, the mullet?
I literally had the mullet. I had the coat. I dress up like him for Halloween, and it just carried on for the rest of the year.
You must have got all the women.
Oh, no, I didn't. Not even close.
I've got none of the women.
No.
No, no.
Whatever the
women.
Opposite of getting all the women is, that's what I got.
You got all the men?
You shut up.
Wow.
We got him rolling in Peace Comics over here.
Man. Burned by Brandon. That's pretty bad.
From across the room, he just nuked you. Oh, man.
Now I know why tigers eat their young.
I'm not that hungry.
All right. Well, we have got 4.5 minutes for honorable mentions.
I have some.
I have some.
You got it.
We have, Keith and I always sing the praises of the Dresden Files.
Yep.
My favorite vampire is, again, turning the vampire the vampire courts on its ears. So there's the red vampires, which are the traditional vampires, the black vampires, which are the even more traditional vampires. But then there is
the white
vampire court, which are the succubuses, the incubuses. Yeah. Harry Dresden's brother is one of them, and his sister.
Lara
Wraith.
Oh, yeah. They were on my list. I figured you were going to pick them, so I didn't.
Yeah, if there's ever... I want to know who they would cast Lara Wraith, because she is supposedly sex on legs.
Yeah, she's supposed
and to. And I've always wondered, like, in the back of my head, like, who would they cast for that? So.
That's a tough one. Yeah.
Well, then I have Gary Oldman in the 1992 Dracula.
You know, that was complete. Such a weird effing film.
It was, but
it's part of the movie.
That's why I liked it, because it was... Taking it, what you said, on its ear is kind of things that you haven't seen before. In Supernatural, the vampire is the alpha vampire.
Yes.
The one that's the father of all, we call him the alpha one. From the comics, not the movie, Morbius.
Oh, I haven't seen the movie yet.
Don't
that
do
bad,
it.
Huh?
There's some nice scenes in it, but the whole thing is kind of a waste. And then... Christopher Sarandon from Fright Night.
Yep, I was just thinking about him.
I actually had Colin Farrell from the new Fright Night because he was actually scarier. Because your whole we gotta invite you in the house. We can't get us, and he goes and burns down the house, so they gotta run out. Right. Like that's freaking genius.
And then Jim Carrey from Once Bitten.
Ah, what about Gina Davis from Transylvania
6-5? I didn't think of that one. That's a good one.
I'm gonna throw out Nicolas Cage from Last Kiss.
Did anybody see Renfield yet?
No.
No.
Is it even out yet?
Yes, it is. I think it came out Friday.
I have not. But him in Vampire's Kiss is. Yes.
How about Janos Scorsini?
Oh, Keith, you got me with another one.
From Night Stalker, the movie.
Oh.
Yeah. The original Night Stalker. Yeah, and then you've got Catherine, I forget. From the sequel, episode, the vampire is one of his victims survives, and it's Catherine. I forget her last name.
I can't think of her name. Yeah. How about Santico Pandemonium from
Satanical
from Dust to Dawn?
That's what.
Oh, Selma Hayek.
We already said that.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
He didn't say her name. He just said Selma Hayek. Well, okay. So that's why you were confused by that when you weren't listening at all to our guest.
What?
But I'm the inconsiderate one.
Fuck yeah.
All right. you got Count Blah from... what the hell's the name of that show, Brandon?
Greg the Bunny.
It's basically demented...
The screwed up version of the Count. Yeah.
Yes. And then my last one would be Lance, who sucks the fun out of everything.
Twice as an episode from both of the fucking Anderson boys over here. Wow. Okay.
I like you, Lance.
Now that I know where I stand. All right. I was going to mention Frank Langella in the 1972 version of Dracula.
Yes.
He was fantastic in that.
Very good.
And then
Dino De Laurentiis?
I believe that was Dino De Laurentiis, yes.
Okay.
And then there is a really great, and I cannot think of the name of the movie, there's a really good, it's got Robert Loggia in it.
God, what is it? Something Blood. Blood Innocent? Something like that? With Anne Perel?
Yes.
Yes, Don Rickles is a vampire.
Right, and the gal's a vampire, she's getting revenge on the mob, and Robert Loggia is the mob boss, he figures he's going to make his men.
Yeah, yes.
It was a really underrated one. It was super cool.
Yes.
I think it's
Don
Blood
Rickles is a vampire?
Yes,
what's the name of this movie?
I think it's Blood, Innocent Blood. Innocent Blood, I'm pretty sure.
And she is just unbelievable.
George Hamilton. As Love at First Bite.
Yes, Innocent Blood is the correct one. Anything else?
No.
I suck.
That was my last segment as a member of the Three Old Geeks because nobody likes me. But that was our three favorite vampires. Let us know what yours are. All right. So the podcast is about to get much, much worse because we have cracked the top 10 of Tubi's list of the worst movies ever, and we are at number 9, and that is
the worstest.
1976's Blood Sucking Freaks. Written and directed by Joel M. Reed. Shame on you, sir. And starring Seamus O'Brien, Luis or Louis de Jesus, Viju Krem, Niles McMaster, Dan Fauci, no relation to Dr. Fauci that I'm aware of, Alan DeLay, and Ernie Pischer.
Hey, okay.
And this was released by Troma in the 1981 re-release. And this is the nastiest piece of trash that I have seen in a long time. Now, Brian, I know you are going to defend its honor, but there was nothing that this was badly shot, badly acted.
It had a twist ending, though.
It had a twist ending, if you want to call it that. It had sexuality that was not sexy. It had gore that did not make me squeamish. It was a struggle to get through.
But it made you want to dance, didn't it, Lance? It made you want to dance.
The Lance Dance.
The Lance Dance.
The Lance Dance is going to be me hitting him over the head with the chair that I'm sitting on, pro wrestling style.
Well, it won't hurt then.
Yeah, I just, I've made this reference a couple times. It's going to the bathroom in the strip club. You make sure you wash your hands really good after you're done. It's just that there was nothing redeeming about this movie whatsoever.
His card, he's watching this, was heating up. It was getting burning hot. His card was like.
Like I told you, after I got done watching this movie, I wanted to take a shower.
Thank you, Mike.
This was a bad movie.
I am not going to disagree with you at all.
Okay. Oh
my God, I hope not.
As I learned on my trip to Cancun, there are breasts I don't want to see.
Did you go to Cancun?
I did. There are breasts that should never be seen.
I think they were all in this movie. Except for maybe
good chunk of them were,
two pair, one pair.
Yeah, so, and like I said, there was more pubic hair in this movie than in most 90s porn.
More 70s porn.
No.
There is more bush in here than the Amazon rainforest. There
was more. Mike is just hitting them out of the park.
There's more bush than George W. That is not where this film becomes interesting.
It's all behind the scenes.
It really is.
Okay, now the only thing that I can make reference is this is supposed to be some kind of black comedy allegory for the New York theater scene, is what I've read just briefly online.
You know what? I don't even take it that way. First of all, Troma, when they received this, they turned it into the MPAA to get a rating. They wouldn't even watch the film. And
they were smart ones.
Troma was cutting shit out
just to get them
to get to the R rating, just to get to the R rating at that point. And the MPAA said, no, we're not even going to watch it. You don't get to. So they released it with an R rating.
Wow.
And the MPAA sued them.
Oh, you're kidding.
No. So technically, this film is not rated, though it would be an X for the time. It should have been. Just for the dart throwing scene. It was done in the Grand Guignol style from the Pigalle district of France. This was a theater that was opened in 1897 and closed in 1962 and did these kind of plays. This is what they did. It was a small cathedral, was the theater. Which gave it a lot of things in the way, but they had nun boxes where nuns would go to listen to the sermons because they wouldn't let women in at that time. So they would be able to sit in a box to listen to mass. But they would put people in there because they would become so sexually aroused by what was going on stage that they couldn't be in public.
So far, this is 1,000 times more interesting.
That's what I said. Wait, this isn't. And now, Grand Guignol, translates basically into the theater of the great puppet, and that was this would have been that kind of theater where they would have showed what these people were showing. Only it wasn't real.
What?
What? Or was it?
The blood I'm certainly thinking, looked real.
Did not.
And the 60.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
The finger coming up through the hole with all the ketchup around it.
Oh, and Jesus.
And then it kind of moved.
That was the funniest. Them playing fucking backgammon. It was a death rattle of that finger. Cutting off the fingers was so funny. Niles McMaster, who played Tom Maverick, the football guy, I found him to be interesting. He's a Chicago boy.
Okay.
Did his first film in 1956. Did his second film, which was...
This,
in 1976. So there's 20 years between the two, and I wanted to explore why that was. I didn't. but he also starred in Alice, Sweet Alice, made in the same year. And if you know 70s films, Alice, Sweet Alice is a classic.
Yeah.
So you're going... You went from blood-sucking freaks to Alice, Sweet Alice?
Are you sure that's the order you went in? Sure, he didn't go. That was me. That was the blood sucking.
No, train. He did. Seamus O'Brien, who was the.
The Manos guy.
Yeah, Sardu. Manos.
Sardu.
Sardu. Yeah.
Manos.
This was his last film, unfortunately, out of the two he did.
Was the first one Manos?
I thought. Dude, would he not have been a perfect Manos?
Yeah, I thought he was Manos' dad.
But he was stabbed.
Oh,
during
Jesus.
An apartment burglary.
Okay.
Yeah. How weird is that?
Yeah, that's kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
It seems like when, is it just me or when he was speaking and doing the Sardu character, did anybody get a throwback that he was trying to do his version of Gene Wilder and Young Frankenstein? That he was doing this.
Young Frankenstein came
out. This would have been before.
No, this was before Young Frankenstein.
Was it?
Well, no, it was after. No.
It was after.
Young Frankenstein was like 79. This was.
This is 76.
This is 76.
And it was probably shot in 74.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I thought the same thing. There were a lot of moments in this I went, that's Gene Wilder.
Yeah.
A lot of Gene Wilder moments.
And Gene Wilder is rolling over in his fucking grave right now.
He's trying to work his way down here to strangle you. Yeah.
Viju Klem,
Desante,
who was the dancer,
Natasha?
Yes,
she
did a handful of softcore porn in the '70s. Which, oh, surprise, surprise! Accidentally shot on a hunting trip in Minnesota. Or Minnesota.
Did everybody in this cast die a horrible death?
They deserved it.
Right. But she was also in Mashed, which was the porn version
of MASH. She played
softcore porn.
Yes.
But got great ratings. People have said that this is a great little film. I'm going to watch it. So
there's a shock.
I found it. I'm going to watch it. Oliver Stone. Yes, Oliver Stone.
That Oliver Stone.
Was a admirer of, what's his name, the guy who directed it. So he was there.
Joel M. Reed.
Yeah. We're going to get into him in a minute.
There's a book on him.
We're going to get into that in a minute. There's a couple books that he wrote. But he was present for the casting and for the shooting of this film. Little Oliver Stone. Little Ollie Stone. Dan Fauci, who's Detective Tucci. he is most notably the acting teacher for names like Marissa Tomei, Fisher Stevens, and Ted Danson, who've all taken his class. Now, acting teacher can be a stretch, but they've all taken his. He's the former executive VP of Paramount TV Comedy.
I did hear that, yes.
His wife wrote. Now, for us, this is big. One episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and two episodes of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Ernie Peischer, the Doctor.
Oh, God.
Yeah, what a weird guy. Goes on to star in 565 episodes of The Edge of Night as Cliff Nelson. 565 episodes.
That's a soul bomber, right?
Yeah.
It's gotta be. Yeah. And Falcon Crest in the 80s. So
good for him.
Yes.
All that for a guy who basically pretends to be blowing bubbles into the chick's brain that he takes the skull off.
Let's put it this way. When they fed him to the feral women in the cage, I was rooting for the feral women.
Yes, mm-hmm. I agree.
Luis de Jesus, who was the dwarf.
Yes.
Ralphus.
Huh?
Ralphus.
Ralphus. Yeah. He also starred in Let My Puppets Come with Viju Klem. These people together, by the way, if you go through all of them, they are a who's who for nobody's in New York porn scene. They played in everything together. You just see the same films coming up with all these people. There were a number of people for whom this was their only film. But, and I'm not even going into all of them, because there's a lot of interesting in a lot of them that I just went, no, that's too much. I can't do it. It should be an hour. But, so Luis de Jesus, Let My Puppets Come with Viju Klem. Which sounds like an interesting little film. No, we're not going to watch it. But you also was in Under the Rainbow with Chevy Chase,
yep.
I believe.
Yep, it's Chevy Chase, yep.
And Star Wars Return of the Jedi as an Ewok. So little porn dwarf guy.
Ended up as an Ewok.
Ended up as an Ewok. Now, Lynette Sheridan, who was the Doctor's victim... She is now a super reputable acting coach who developed her own style and is huge. Now let's go back to fucking Louis Reed, the fucking director. Is that his name?
Joel M. Reed.
Joel M. Reed, not Louis. Joel.
That's his brother.
That's his brother. He did nothing. Lou Reed? He did nothing except work a hard man's job.
Died broken and alcoholic.
Yeah. Huge fly fisherman, has written a number of books about fly fishing. So, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm glad he didn't write a book about directing movies, because I don't think anybody would have bought it.
No, but still, the executive VP of fucking TV comedy for Paramount. That's... really?
That's when Paramount wasn't funny.
And an acting coach! And has written a book on acting, but the fly fishing thing I found to be more... It's written a few books on fly fishing.
There is just so much. It's hard to believe that these people did anything else after this movie.
Because once you do perfection, you quit, right?
Oh, this is so bad. I mean, you talked that two of them ended up as acting coaches.
Yes.
Right? And yet, you know, in one part of the movie, you have the girl comes, they kidnap the girl to make Natasha dance, right?
Yes.
So they're like, we're going to do something to make her dance. They've tried to torture her and she won't dance.
Their
so they take
rival,
her back,
they can,
right?
Yeah.
And Sardu goes, you'll want to dance after you see this, right? Ralphus, yes, yes, master, yes. And then you hear, you know, and then as this is going on, all you hear is, ah, oh, ah, ah, ah. And then it stops. And he comes walking out with two severed feet behind his back and shows it to the dancer, to Natasha, and her reaction is, oh, yes, I'll dance. I mean,
you never know what's going to be that push over the edge.
Yeah.
There's got to be. If there's any movie we've watched that makes me think that the four of us...
There is no God.
But the four of us could come up with a better movie shot on our iPhones. It's this movie. I really think...
Even shot on my phone.
You know what,
even on your phone.
Yeah. Because when they come back around to her still crawling through the backstage...
Yes. Yeah.
Like...
And
weeks later.
Blood.
And you just see the two legs, which are obviously prosthetics, right? Bad ones, and they put all of the fake blood, and they're just sitting there moving them
badly.
Out of frame badly, and you see them going, like, what?
That was fucking...
What
that
is
with the fluorescent red paint?
Fluorescent red paint.
What is the name of that? The it starts with a P, like primer?
Tempura?
Yes, yes! T rhymes with P. P rhymes with T.
Tempura.
You're just terrible with proper names right now.
That's trouble.
Yeah, the paint that came in like the white jugs when you were
yes.
in grade school or whatever.
Yeah. That's what it is, the tempura.
Most of the time in these movies, there's something that you'll laugh at. You know, this was described as a horror comedy, right? It had no horror in it.
Who described it as that?
No, when I pulled it up.
There were some funny parts to
when
it.
I pulled it up on the channel to watch, it said the description was horror comedy.
I watched it on Tubi. It said horror comedy.
Yeah. At no point was there anything that I considered a horror except the bad acting and the bad directing. And secondly, the comedy, the only thing I thought was halfway that got a chuckle was when Detective Tucci's going into the back and Ralphus is sitting behind the wall, he comes out with the gun... freeze, and then Ralphus hits him in the nuts,
You're a big man for a nut. You're a good big nut shot guy, aren't you, Mike?
Yes. So he hits him in the nuts. I chuckled. That was funny. And he runs away. That was it. Everything else in the movie, I just sat there going like, please can this movie end? Please can this movie
end?
Why
did I say I was going to do it this week?
Why this week? Brian's torturing me when he asked me. He knew this was going to happen. Why this week?
I thought the commitment that Ralph has made to his character alone.
Well, he obviously, you've was seen huge. His, he's been in a lot of
he's
movies.
He's been in some big, big bunch
of things.
He
plays Mr. Stud all the time.
It took
he
a lot
Mr.
of...
Mr. Stud, yeah.
In like five, six
yeah,
movies.
He's Mr. Stud in a lot of movies. He's got... He's got the teapot thing going on.
I think the bravest thing he did was go up and take the darts out of the girl's ass when they were playing darts.
Which I thought went on a little too long. But I thought, again, the commitment to you would check each needle as you pulled it out. I thought when he was eating dinner off the girl
with the candle,
that was funny. I thought that was, don't you dare ruin my dinner. Whatever he was eating made me sick. I'm going to tell you that. That was the most horror thing in the entire film. I don't know what the fuck he was eating.
Pretty much they shoveled off the bottom of a dumpster somewhere and just shoveled out a plate.
But he was eating it. I mean, he was really eating it.
Starving actor.
Holy Christ, was that bad. Though there were things that... This is one that I think could be remade.
No. And the name is way deceiving.
Right.
As evident by our top three this week.
Yeah, I wasn't ready for that. When I looked at it, I was like, huh. This is a slam dunk.
If anything, there should have been four of the
we've done
top three. It should have been a top
movies,
four.
Because this was week four.
All right, Brian, your thorough research and enthusiasm. Like Gene Siskel always used to say, if the conversation about the movie is more interesting than the movie, then it's a bad movie.
Oh, God, no, there was nothing redeeming about this film. Oh, no, not even the nudity. And I kept thinking through the whole thing that, I'm going to hear that, Brian's going to love the nudity.
Oh, no,
there was nothing even attractive about it.
Like I said, it was sexuality without being sexy.
Yeah,
it's torture porn.
And it was probably the earliest example of torture porn probably ever.
No, I think we could probably find earlier. But
I know you probably
he'll
could.
Do the research, yeah.
But
put in the hours.
But, and these were not unattractive women. It just wasn't attractive.
An attractive naked woman in a dingy basement, these surroundings kind of, detract from the beauty of the woman, maybe? Because everything...
the action's going around... the same time,
You don't have to explain to me why she wasn't unattractive. I knew she wasn't she was unattractive, but I'm just saying that these were not unattractive women. There was nothing that was titillating about them being naked. Just because of the movie and the tone and the... it just wasn't there. Which goes back to my, there were breasts I didn't need to see. There were breasts and full frontal nudity I didn't need to see in this film.
This whole film,
though, it
I
did
didn't
play a part. I mean, it
all.
Played a part. It wasn't gratuitous. In that,
there's a positive. It wasn't gratuitous. There was a reason for the nudity.
It was very functional.
There was an absolute reason in this context for the nudity. It wasn't gratuitous.
By definition, it was not gratuitous. Yes, Brian, you are absolutely correct.
So,
stop. You're correct. Leave it alone.
No,
we're saying you're right,
say
Brian. Yeah. Brian, you're absolutely
okay,
right.
Let's see where he's going to drive this off the cliff. Okay, go ahead.
I don't think you can do it. I don't think you can save anything about this movie.
No, there's nothing. I've already said it's not redeemable. I'm not saying that. I'm not even saying that the nudity made it fun.
The conversation's gone on too long for what this movie
yes.
is what I'm thinking.
Thank you, Keith. We usually give at least one star because at least it got made.
It got made.
No.
It doesn't even get that. I wish it never got made.
I can't give it a star for being made.
I forget which one I gave negative 5 stars to. This is negative 10 stars.
You know what? I would give it at least a 2 just for how interesting it is.
No.
Wrapped around everything about it. It was a small gift.
Two out of a billion. Yes, maybe.
No. It was a small gift in that everything that I kept finding about these people
or the little backstory stuff was so interesting. I'm going to give it 2 stars just for that.
I'm going to give it, for every bad pair of boobs we saw, so what, negative 15 stars, negative 20
Mike,
stars?
Mike, you beat me.
Wow. Yeah. I don't think I've ever done negative before, but...
Make an exception on this one.
I'll give it -7.5.
-7.5.
It was, there's no reason to ever see this again. There was no reason to see it in the first place.
Other than it was
Fuck
on this
you,
list.
Fuck you, Tubi.
Yeah, Tubi, we're going to come find you, and we're going to get even. Yeah, do not watch this one, guys, unless you are...
Sick.
Sick, and not even Brian sick, really sick.
Yeah, this is,
not even Brian sick.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
All right, so for this edition of Sunday Afternoon Kung Fu Theater, we watched another in the Detective D series, and this is a completely different movie series. This is not Sweetheart. This is not Avengers Detective D. This is more like Sherlock Holmes Detective D.
Yeah.
And that is Detective D and the Solitary Skies Killer from 2020, directed by Francis Nam, written by Xuyang Guo, and starring Yihang Du, Yang Xu, and Zhu Wen. And so we've got a completely different cast of characters. It should be stated that D. Renji is a historical figure. So he's kind of like, or I don't know if he's public domain in China or something like that, but apparently you can do whatever you want with him, and this is a completely different set of movies and stuff like that. And it was a little bit more grounded, still had kind of that, the secrets of ancient China to it and stuff like that. But yes, you have a bride killing her entire family.
That's the opening.
In the opening sequence, and D is sent in to investigate. And there is a handmaiden who is born, and they have the introduction of the Chinese zodiac or whatever, and she was born under the unlucky star, the solitary star, and is considered a jinx, and the other people of the household want her arrested and killed because essentially they're blaming her for the bad luck that has come upon this family. And D is sent to investigate. His girlfriend is apparently in a coma from a previous something or other.
I do like that, because then it does establish that Detective D...
is not a eunuch, as you've been...
It's not a eunuch. Yeah, because that's what we had
wondered.
Well,
this one's not.
This Detective D is not a eunuch.
And, yes, you are introduced to a warlord and his swordswoman daughter, who is a relation to this family that gets slaughtered. They want this woman to be punished. He says he's going to investigate to find out who the real killer is.
They just want
to
kill her.
They just basically, yeah, they do want to just kill her. A little bit more investigation, a little less kung fu, and it comes down to silken thread acupuncture, which is...
spoilers!
Really kind of cool.
Which is way cool!
I'm a really big fan of the, you know what, back in ancient China they had all this alchemy that was law, you know, that doesn't work in the modern day and stuff like that. Yeah, you find out that this warlord was responsible for the slaughter of this sect, who was the masters of silken thread acupuncture, and that several members of the sect survived, and they're having their revenge right now. We won't spoil too much here in case anybody want to watch this. And this is a 2020 film, so we will put the spoiler in front of this. But yeah, a different take on Detective D. A little less epic, a little bit more down to earth. I kind of liked it.
More detecting, less battling.
Yeah.
He didn't even have his, like, magic wand.
I did miss the dragon taming mace. He was more of a swordsman in this.
Yeah. He's badass swordsman, though, still.
What I really did like was when the daughter was beating the shit out of everybody, and then Detective D gets involved, and it's just like they trade like 3 or 4, bah, 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 and the dad just pulls her back.
Yeah,
stop. And he just says, him. No, you cannot beat him. He will embarrass you.
Yeah.
I just thought that was a cool scene, you know, because they always talk about, my kung fu is greater than your kung fu.
Yeah. And the dad was like the super swordsman, and he's going, honey, save your pride, you know.
Yeah, this is...
It's not going to end well
for you. This is, you will not defeat him.
He's toying with you right now.
Yeah. Which I really appreciated.
Yeah.
They still do the Detective D thing where they show the one slow motion, or one or two or three
blows where he'll go like under the rib cage and then on the shoulder and then to the temple with one finger. Yeah. And then all of a sudden the guy falls down and he's just this twitching mass of shit. And I love how they do that. Even
you
in
could
the different...
you could trace Guy Ritchie's Sherlock Holmes.
Yes.
In some of that to this.
Yes.
Like you could see like where the guys in China were going, they did a pretty good job with that. Let's steal
one
some
step
of that.
Ahead of his opponent. I know what he's gonna do, or two or three steps ahead. He's gonna do that, I'm gonna counter with this.
Well, you know what, you start with essentially let's burn the witch at the stake kind of mentality. And all of a sudden it becomes about the killing of an entire sect of people and I did have one huge problem.
Okay.
Huge problem.
Huge
problem. We can talk about it now or we can talk about it later.
Well, let's get it out of the way, Brian.
Okay. So 3-year-old little girl escapes from 10 years prior.
Would she be 13?
She'd be 13.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not and Detective D wants to marry her.
She wanted to marry Detective D.
She did
want to marry Detective D. He set that up to get
the other guy.
To go deal
with
the guy.
No, I understand that.
Okay.
But she would have been 13. And not, as this shows, probably 1920.
I think it was before that.
No, he's saying she's 19 or 20.
I thought you were saying year 19.
I thought that for a second. I'm like, oh, no, I know what he's talking about.
Yeah. 19, 20.
All right, Mike, was this your first Detective D, or you've been watching these with us?
No, I watched the first one and the third one.
Okay.
I did not see the young one, the middle one.
Okay.
And watching this one, it was kind of, and I watched them pretty close together, like in the 5 days separating them. And I felt this movie was the TV version of the previous two movies.
Like they didn't have the budget for the big effects and stuff like that?
Yes.
Fun.
It was much more scaled down from the visual effects. I think it was much more scaled down from the kung fu. A lot of the jumping from the floor to the top of the roofs of the buildings. And actually, I go back to something Keith said on the last one. The first movie... Well, I think the first movie is the strongest one where he's a detective, where he's figuring things out.
There's a bigger mystery, yeah.
Yeah. Well, this one, he has to, he kind of knows who this bad one, the person is, but he doesn't know why, he doesn't figure out, and he sets this trap so to get the guy to basically confess everything.
Yeah.
I would rather have him deduce everything and figure it out than I'm going to set a trap and you have to tell me everything. So
you're looking for more like the Agatha Christie, like, I've got this all figured out, and this, you know...
Where you line up all the suspects, cabin of the boat.
And it wasn't
first
you
I thought it was you
this,
because,
and it wasn't you because of this. So, and I think the first movie was stronger for that, and I kind of expected more of that in here, and it kind of let me down a little bit as far
and this was more Columbo than...
Yeah,
it was sure, almost like you knew who did, like what would they call that, How Ketchum instead of a whodunit or whatever.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot, it wasn't like a lot of red herrings where you're going, it could be this guy or it could be this gal or something like that. It was more of a, well, there's only one guy that survived this whole thing and he's kind of a dick, so, you know.
Yeah. And I, from an overall story point, I thought, you know, you got the action adventure of the first one. The third one is really, like you said, more of an Avengers. It's got a lot of fantasy stuff. You've got a lot of special effects. This is more of a tragedy.
Tragedy!
Thank you for going into that, Mike.
Than anything else because you got, it's a tragedy because the whole sect was killed. It's a tragedy because she lost her memories of her family and her sect. It's a tragedy because she loved D, but he didn't love her. It's a tragedy because...
There's a lot of romantic
entanglements in this. And I'm like, okay, I can see having a little of that in the movie, but I want to see more of the action and what's going on and where's the kung fu and detective.
I agree. That's the only thing I want. There's a lot of romantic entanglement. He's in love with her, who's in love with D, but D's in love with his comatose
girlfriend.
Yeah.
And then the one cat is obsessed with the upset, and that was kind of creepy because that was his sister or whatever.
No, he was in charge of her.
Yeah,
it was his cousin.
Yeah,
it was his cousin.
And that's okay at that time. They didn't have genetics then.
Okay,
well, 13 was probably okay at that time too.
13 was okay at that time.
So,
Yeah, so for me, compared to the other ones, this was kind of a...
Kind of a letdown, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was interesting that they had the Phantom Market and the crazy...
The Ghost Market.
I did like the Ghost Market, and then they had the crazy apothecary guy. Oh, you'll have to try some of my soup.
But he showed up before.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm almost interested in reading a little bit about the actual, you know...
Like, is he a reoccurring
story? Like, is he a reoccurring... Because obviously... D has got his, this is a completely different guy. He had a different name. It was like Bao something or whatever, but he had his Dr. Watson.
Yeah.
Who's a really good looking young cat or whatever, you know.
And could actually fight somehow.
Yeah. He was as opposed to the other guy.
I did like that. I like the fact that, you know, like Sherlock Holmes has his Watson. He's got his Quincy.
Yeah.
The guy, the medical examiner. I did like the Ghost Market. And I thought, it does have a feel like Sherlock Holmes and he's got his misfits or the Shadow, or Doc Savage. So I kind of like that he knows all these odd, weird people that can help him with it. But I'd like to see more interaction with that and less about the, you know, how do I wake up my girlfriend? She's been comatose, you know.
Yeah.
And now she's been so.
And now she's silked out. Yeah, she's
and you couldn't just cut the threads for the silk acupuncture. There was some. I was expecting the apothecary or the alchemy that was involved with. And they just everybody's better. Here's the paper and we'll figure.
Well, no, it was the directions that told you how to undo it. Yeah.
I was hoping for a little bit of a rare herb or something like that, and you know there was a little bit more adventure there or something like that.
Right, but she saw it in the fire. Yeah, so the paper is in the fire. Yeah. She takes it out of the little tube, right? And then you're kind of sitting there going, because they tell Everett the story after everything is done, and you're kind of figuring like, okay, how did you do all this? How did you figure this out? And then they show the backstory. Oh, I saw it in there. I unrolled it. This is how to free everybody. You know, that nonlinear storytelling. I kind of wanted it to be Detective D figured out, him find the little scroll and figure out where it was kept. I just felt like everything had to be given.
It was like he was the central character, and everything kind of happened around him, type of thing. I get what you're saying.
Well, I mean, he discovered how to do it, but it was written in a way that he couldn't figure out because he couldn't translate it because it was written in sex,
code or whatever,
language,
where she could then once she remembered translate who she was, she could translate it. Though again, at 3 years old.
Would she remember the language?
Pretty, yeah. Writing? She had to be pretty bright.
She was also like the daughter of the queen or to the head person, so she was probably indoctrinated.
That doesn't necessarily make you smarter.
I know. She was probably indoctrinated from the beginning.
Into the stuff.
Yeah. So she would probably know more than like the street urchin.
Yes. Yes, I will say yes to that.
Well, thank you. Thank
I
you
will
for
say
giving
yes
me that little
to
bit.
That.
Wow.
But again,
so
a three-year-old doesn't... I did like how they did her memories. Like when she was walking through the city and then and the
things
you see the formed. Skeleton
yeah.
and all of a sudden
yeah.
you see
yeah,
the
yeah.
battle.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
That was cool. And then, that she had the needle in her head that she had to take out because he acupunctured her. As a, six-year-old, that's pretty good. That's pretty fuck good. To be able to do acupuncture to that degree.
Well, all of I like the
never
fact
got
that
infected or anything.
Yeah, but they were actually showed like you know they would roll the needle and stick it in, and it didn't look like it was special effects to me. It looked like
they might have just really done it.
Hey, put the needle
they
in.
Could.
Acupuncture needles are made to do that. They're not like not sticking straight needles in you.
Well, it's you.
But I just thought it was cool to actually see it. You know,
tap it in.
And, tap it in, boom.
Well, no, and I like the doctor had, there was a great, she had a great term for it. It was, not Gates, but like her.
Yeah.
It was like your chakras or whatever. Yeah. There was like a really cool term for it. I forget what it was, but I like that kind of that Chinese medicine aspect to it and stuff like that. I think that's really cool. And again, you can get away with more if this is ancient China. You could say, oh, these are all forgotten lore and, you know, and the silk acupuncture actually works and stuff like that. I mean, you don't have to, I didn't have to suspend my disbelief as much as I did in the other D ones where it was like, okay, well, you know, this dragon came and smashed up all the the throne room or whatever. And oh, by the way, it was just a mass hallucination.
The
and
giant
we,
stingray of
and the million-eyed baby thing.
It's fucking cool. But
oh, no, there's no, don't get me wrong. I still really like those ones, but this one was a little bit more. I thought this was a little bit more grounded. Yeah. So
you know what? I gotta say, I started this with kind of a. Okay, this is the fourth Detective D. Are we doing too many Detective Ds? Do we need to go a different direction? Just for fucking Kung Fu's sake. Jesus Christ. Blah, 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 blah. About halfway through it, I was like, okay, I want more Detective D. I'm so excited.
So we're not
going to
watch
this.
Detective Greasy Rat or whatever?
Well, we're going to watch Greasy Rat, but we got another Detective D for next week.
Okay. All right, that being said, what was the, what do we rank, Detective D and the Solitary Skies Killer?
You know what? It's been a week of threes for me, and I'm going to stick with it. Do I think it was as good as? I probably thought it was better until I listened to you guys, and then I went, "Oh yeah, that's true." Yeah, Detective D really didn't figure shit out, did he? But there was some really cool shit in it that I really liked. So I'm going to go three.
Go ahead, Mike.
I'm going to go two, just because it was a good movie, but again, it felt like the. You know, the TV version of the three.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's a good. That, I do. That's a good. Yeah. Yeah. Like they do the sitcom based off of Animal House or something like that. Yeah.
No, so, I really do like that.
No, that's an F description.
And especially watching the other two movies really close prior to this, I got to go with two.
Yeah. And I like the other D better.
The actual actor?
The first one was good. I like the first guy.
Yeah.
I like that this D is not a eunuch.
Are you sure?
Yeah. I like that this D is not.
I wish
how
you were
do you know?
A unit.
Did they have a
kid? I rate this one 2.5 stars. I thought it was pretty good.
Oh, I'll rate it 2 if you don't mind.
Oh, I'm sorry. You got it off on a tangent, so you didn't rate it? What is your rating, Keith?
I will agree with you, 2.5 stars.
Wow. Okay. That was that's Detective D and the Solitary Skies Killer.
When you tell me.
Give it a watch and let us know what you think. All right, so we were following along with the latest Star Wars release on the Disney app, and that is The Mandalorian, and we watched 2 weeks ago episode 8 of season 3, and that is The Return, and that is the Mandalorians retaking Mandalore from Darth Maul, and I had mentioned from Moff Gideon, that shows you how much this imprinted on me.
It'd be cool if they took it from Darth Maul.
Yeah, from Moff Gideon, and I had mentioned in the penultimate review.
Love that.
That, you know, there's usually one that, you know, there's every one of these that's really cool, and there's usually one episode that's kind of a clunker. Little did I know it would be the season fucking finale of this program.
Oh, come on.
Dude, this sucked.
I'm really shocked. I wore my Mandalorian t-shirt in support of Lance because he's been against you guys.
Been wrong the whole time?
No, he's been so excited.
Is.
No, he was so excited about the show and saying so many positive things. And now he's turned into you, Keith. So
he's right.
Okay. Disney owns Star Wars. We got the Disney ending.
We did.
Like, we got, like, the 50s, I mean, this is always compared to a Western, this is the 50s, at the end of the Rifleman episode, everybody's happy, and they're putting their feet up on the rail at the horse ranch or whatever.
I thought we got the Kung Fu ending. I mean, this was a Kung Fu episode. You had the big bad guy, he had to go through each of those little dividers, fighting with different weapons each time.
Oh, don't get me wrong.
It was 36 chambers.
There were cool portions of this, but the overall, like, I literally, when they relight the forge, and X-Wolves goes, "For Mandalore!" They all go, "For Mandalore!" I had fucking goosebumps. That was awesome. I mean, that was, I watched it twice. The fight, when you were, like you said, the 36 chambers, when they're releasing the individual shields or something like that, and he's fighting with all the guys with different weapons.
Pick up different
was
weapons
fucking
every time.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It was so formulaic and so like I read a just a blurb like Favreau said, "Oh, it's going to be satisfying." It's like,
no, it was
really.
I was very satisfied. Yeah, first of all, I hated the Baron Garza armor. I just did not
the robo,
like that. The robo...
Yeah, mean, but like in
Darth
most...
Darth Gideon?
Yeah, I'm, yeah.
Yeah, Darth Gideon.
Yeah. Moff Gideon.
Yeah, like
Baron Garza Gideon.
Darth Gideon.
It was Darth Gideon.
Well, okay, he was trying to get the Force, too. He wanted to be Darth Vader.
But you know what? What I thought was interesting, and somebody had pointed this out, and I liked it, was that was most likely a clone.
Oh, so we're going to get Moff Gideon again?
I hope not. Star Wars as a whole, Favreau and Filoni need to stop doing that. Because what they've done is taken any meaning out of any death that happens. You don't care. There's no emotional. Well,
they did that with the last three movies. The redemption of Vader was the death of killing Palpatine.
Yes.
Oh, by the way, we made clones of him.
Yeah.
Fucking stupid.
Fucking stupid. Which is why they're so universally reviled by me.
You're a universal
in
one.
Brian universe.
In the Brian universe. If you're a planet in my orbit, fuck yeah, you hate it.
No, you haven't seen it yet.
I did not like it. I am so torn because I thought it was so cute. The little Grogu scene where he's running on the lights and the Praetorian guards are trying to kill him. I thought that was so cute and so funny. And just at the same time, how pathetic are they?
Yes.
The
elite warrior class of the former Empire can't. Kill a kid.
Well,
yes. Can't kill a baby.
Makes Pax or Vax or whatever it is the who fought him and got killed.
Yeah.
Seemed like a giant did Jaren, who was fighting them and they're beating the shit out of. But all Grogu has to do is run and squeak.
Wee! Wee!
Well, I think that was a throwback to Yoda's fight in one of the... It's the second movie? Attack of the Clones, or
he was a Wolverine on acid.
Yeah, but I mean,
the third one, he's like spinning top of death.
Right, but they're basically saying like, okay, what would he have been like if he was a kid? Then he got Grogu.
You know, I just got to say this out loud so that everybody knows. First of all, that it's real, but that secondly, you can go look at it. It has nothing to do with anything we're talking about. But
well, this is wonderful.
Go. But so we had Cocaine Bear this year, which was great. But many years ago, they had Crack-coon.
I will get even with you, Mike. You brought donuts, you brought fucking red vines. I will get even with you.
He hasn't even eaten the red vines yet.
I can't wait for Crystal Meth Monkey.
Crack-coon was, like in 1980.
I don't know.
Crack-coon! Crack-coon, come on! Anyway, well, we were talking about Yoda being a...
You can edit this all out, right? Look at the time this takes place.
No. Yoda was like a hamster on crack, was what they would always say. Because he was. That was great. But this was not Grogu. Grogu was just running along the lights, and they were trying to cut him down. And that was silly.
Yeah,
but I loved it at the same time.
I wanted to root for him, and I agree with you. I thought it was cute.
I kept on waiting for take a bullet to the a blaster.
I was waiting
to the
for
chest.
The Frodo for Frodo getting stabbed by the troll. Yeah,
never came.
Oh, Frodo! When you said, I was thinking you were going to go with the Godfather, but that's Fredo. And not to be confused.
Okay,
with
now
the
you have no concept of proper names today whatsoever, dude.
Now I'm starting to get mad at Mike.
The other part was the ships when. He went up to get the rest of the Mandalorians to come down as reinforcements. I thought it was a little odd. I actually went back to watch it twice because the first time I watched it, I'm like, "How is he flying up with his jetpack into space to get into the ship to get everybody down?"
Well, they're airtight.
I thought of that too, but I did watch it a second time, and they weren't quite in space.
Okay,
they were probably at enough.
There's probably not enough air to
air
keep it
together, but he's pressurized.
But didn't survive underneath the water, so there's got to be some sort of like
a leak or something. Yeah. Not to mention it's freaking cold, so I'm sure they're turning to ice. But
he obviously got over the problem Iron Man had because Iron Man's a dork.
Well, Iron Man at least he can warm up the inside of the suit. They're just wearing their armor on the outside.
Well, it takes heat, obviously, because they're blasting with like a big flamethrower, and
that's true.
Still fighting.
Well, then they get in. He gets up there. He gets the ship. The people, the Mandalorians, leave. They come down. They get into their ships, and really, it's basically a big cloud bank. You have the ships going down, and then the Empire comes up, and they don't see each other. Just the clouds kind of obscured everything. I thought that was a little
No one has radar.
Yeah, they don't have radar in the future.
You couldn't use it.
That was the whole thing. Yeah, they said that the magnetic field was so messed up on Mandalore that the sensors and radar and all that shit didn't work. All
right, so I actually feel better about
that. That's why Axe had to go up there because he couldn't just radio.
You couldn't actually radio until you got past that whole cloud thing.
Yeah.
You couldn't use your radio. It wouldn't matter. As soon as you got into the clouds from that point on, you were alone.
And I think the reason I liked it, too, was there was a lot of talk, even on the other podcast. You said there's a second spy. So yeah. I'm going in like, okay, this is when Axe is going to
screw him.
He's going to not notify him, or he's going to go to the Empire or something. And I decided I'm just going to watch it and
ignore Brian.
Ignore Brian and just go in without any, this is what happens. And I thought that's why I enjoyed it more, because it wasn't like, well, how come he wasn't the spy? Or even on the Forger, when she's coming down and I'm looking at her helmet, and you pointed out she's got the horns on the helmet. So and you see that Darth Gideon has the horns on his helmet. And you're like, I'm thinking, I'm not even going to pay attention to it. I'm just going to watch the show. And it was much better when I took all of my guesswork out of it.
I also did that. Where I was waiting, because it's not like I came up with that on my own. Really, don't.
No, a lot of people said that too.
Yeah. And I still want to know where the second spy was. Why would you name something spies if there's one spy? Then it's just spy. It's not spies. Right?
You're the word guy, right? He's not. He should.
I'm just checking the calendar. It is Sunday. I thought it was Friday.
No. So where's the second spy? There has to be another spy. And I kept waiting for it. And finally, during the middle of the episode, I was like, okay, I'm just going to wait to see when this person... Because you got... what's his name?
The other spy. We know
Axl Rose coming down. And he was doing the ship thing. And he was not going to give up. He was doing a great job. And then you have the armorer who's knocking the shit out of people. I mean, I was cheering through that whole... fight.
Okay, and again, I wasn't satisfied with the story ending and the actual ending and stuff like that. The fight between the Beskar stormtroopers and the Mandalorians with the jetpacks was as good a Star Wars as I've ever seen.
And I love the fact that they had the Mandalorians. They were better than the stormtroopers because they should be. They've been practicing with these jetpacks forever.
They needed to be because, you keep going with, oh, the Mandalorians are the tough ones. They're the Spartans of the Star Wars universe. They're so tough. And then they lose every fucking battle. I mean, it's like fourth graders on the soccer team. Hey, let's play the Mandalorians. And they just kick their ass. It would have been horrible. That was the fucking battle. You're not tough.
But there were a lot of good points. You might not have liked the ending, but... I thought it was a great episode. I liked where they went with everything. They tied it up. That I don't even know if they're coming back with season four yet. Did they announce it?
There is a season four.
There is a season four. I have a feeling because correct me if I'm wrong, Brian. There's a movie coming out that Favreau's in charge of. That's going to kind of put a cap on
Filoni is directing it.
Okay,
but it's going to tie everything together with the Mandalorian, Ahsoka, and
Boba Fett. So this timeline, like the post,
but it's 2 years from now. So yeah, there will be a season four.
It's the post Empire era or whatever.
Yeah,
and I think
it's gonna be them sitting on the porch talking.
And I think setting it up the way they did, where he's got a porch and he's out there and Grogu's playing with the frogs.
Yeah,
I think that lends itself.
Waiting for you to eat it. Yeah, you're gonna eat it.
I was waiting for him to just pull it apart.
No, then I'd kind of be worried.
Like I said,
why is he pulling flywings?
He's going to be a sick little boy. Would Sith. Do that if we had brain powers.
I don't think I'd eat the frog. No,
I wouldn't eat it. But
he already ate frog
eggs,
so what's the difference? That's probably when I was kidding.
But what I was gonna say was, I think it sets it up to have more of the lone wolf and cub kind of storyline. Now go back to what they started out, which is him and Grogu having these adventures. They could even do a time jump if they wanted to. Grogu's a little bit bigger.
They're not going to change Grogu because he's a marketing powerhouse. I mean, like,
Oh, change his name. Now you can come up with 14 more pops.
Yeah, exactly. Now they're going to have, like, Din Grogu.
Yeah.
Now you're going to have the variant pop Funko figure of it's Grogu, and then we're just going to give him a different coat of paint. It's going to be Din Grogu, you know?
Yeah. They had the cutest little Mandalorian armor, Grogu.
I saw that. Yeah, it was like fan art.
Oh,
I saw it.
Oh, that was fucking great. I almost sent it out to you guys, and then I thought, no, that would beat me up. I'll get beat up when I come in on Sunday. I love the ending. I thought the ending was perfect. I thought, you know what, I'm just going to be kind of a bounty hunter. I'll take whatever jobs I feel I can take for me and my kid. And then him just sitting on the porch, if he'd had a pipe.
I was thinking he needed a pipe and a jug of corn whiskey.
And he needed a Bo-Katan in a fucking towel, leaning on the door with her helmet on.
That's the other movie
and
that
only
you watched Friday
only
night, right?
Helmet, right? Yeah.
Well, the other part I want to know is, Lance, I want to know your take on... So Axe brings the ship down while they're fighting Moff Gideon.
Okay.
Right? And they're getting their ass kicked. They can't get out of the area. The ship's coming down right on top of them. Bo-Katan gets her little shield.
Yeah, I'm going to protect us.
I'm going to protect us with her little shield. And the explosion goes off, trying to figure out if they're vaporized. And Grogu saves them.
Everyone saw that coming.
Right, I want to get his take on it. Because as I'm watching it, I liked it. I thought it was good. Grogu saved them. And I'm thinking, Lance is either pulling his hair out that he's like, what the fuck?
There was precedent for that. And I'm good with it because the first season, Gina Carano was the one, when you first see Moff Gideon and they're after Grogu, they send in the flamethrower stormtrooper.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
And Grogu like manipulates the flame. And you're going like, okay, he's that bad at this age. He's that badass of a force manipulator where he can affect energy on a atomic level or whatever. I was good with that. Hamstringing the Praetorian guards, like Brian said, that I had a problem with. That kind of made Paz Vizsla's death like, oh, well, fuck, you know, fuck this guy. He wasn't that tough because the fucking baby cannot fucking outsmart these guys or whatever.
I don't know if he outsmarted him as so much as just...
Avoided him?
Avoided him. Stayed alive
That's
enough.
That's what I'm going to say, yeah.
He avoided him enough for...
For Din to come back in, come and back then in. All of a sudden, then it turned into fucking John Wick.
Yes.
Because he's fucking doing the hand-to-hand combat with the fucking blasters. That was badass.
Well, he was doing that in the chambers, too. Yeah, right? That's what I thought. Right. I'm like, this is very much... I thought John Wick-esque, yes.
And it needed to be, because again, Din Djarin needed to be badass. But he also, you talk precedent, Paz Vizsla did the same thing when his son was taken by the bird. It was push yourself past whatever you could do to get your kid back.
Yeah,
because right.
Yeah.
The youngling is the important thing. Yeah.
Again,
and
why I thought at some point they're going to blast the whole, do the whole Frodo thing, and that was going to set.
Not the Godfather Frodo.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. And then there's going to set Din off, and Din was going to just waylay everyone because
I was
looking for that.
He kills everybody.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's the dog in John Wick.
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't.
Dog's cuter.
I wasn't even thinking about that as I'm watching it. I didn't think that was going to happen. I just, you know, the part at the end where he formally adopts him, it's kind of like, well, you've been kind of his dad for the last three seasons, yeah, so all you're doing is formally doing it.
Reinforcing
Lone Wolf and Cub, right.
And it seems like the way is kind of mutable. Like,
yeah,
it's convenient when you want it to be. Why didn't he fucking adopt him, like, last season or something like that? Because they were...
Because he had to get him to his people.
Okay. I'm being a grumpy
because
old man
remember,
on this one.
Remember, that was his journey, was to return
was
him
to return him
people.
To his
yeah,
own
yeah,
people.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
no.
That, that's what he vowed to do.
Yeah, what he realized was he is his people.
All right, so
he needs him as much.
The
the Mythosaur.
I was just gonna say the 2-ton monster
didn't ride it.
Well, boy, I was wrong. I was wrong.
Right. Well,
said it last week. You're like, dude, they're saving it for the movie.
No, and I thought that they would. And they're also saving the birds. The birds are going to come back in the movie, and they're going to be riding the birds.
No, Grogu's going to eat them.
That would be funny as shit. Man.
Just a giant,
you just fucking chicken coming out of his mouth,
as he's just fucking
riding the mythosaur.
Just fat little Grogu laying on.
No,
the ground
it's gonna be Bo-Katan.
Chicken leg.
Okay. Like I could see like Grogu sitting on top of its head or something, but Bo-Katan's gonna actually ride it. Or
because
whatever.
Okay, that when
Din's,
he,
Din's wings.
That brought Brandon.
Spawn of the Ruinators.
No.
The son of the Ruinator.
Mandalore's gonna open the chicken from Din's wings.
Din's wings.
He's gonna be funny somehow.
Okay.
I was gonna say, like, when he reaches down, when Grogu reaches down and he looks into the water and he panned down, you see the mythosaur, right?
Yeah.
So is Grogu sensing the mythosaur under the water, or did the mythosaur sense Grogu
both.
On
he
top?
Contact him.
Both.
You think it's both?
Yeah, it's both ways. Yeah. So, Brandon, what would you like to say?
Oh, so these two were talking about eating the mythosaur.
Oh, not the mythosaur. No.
The birds.
The birds. The birds they saved.
Remember the birds that they saved? The
no,
baby birds?
I didn't watch it.
Oh, they saved two baby birds.
The big bird that tried
but
to eat
three
big
of
fucking
them.
Birds.
Three.
Yeah, three.
So,
they
so what
shit.
You're thinking is that Grogu is basically going to become Nibbler.
Yes. Basically, he is. He is Nibbler. That's a good point. That's where they got the idea from.
I'm sorry.
Sure. Yeah. He eats everything.
He's a Nibbler. Any kind of structure in this podcast is going out the window.
Nibbler.
Wait.
When was the structure?
Yeah.
I'm surprised you really didn't like the finale because.
I'm literally the guy who watches The Rifleman on Saturday afternoons, and I just was like, meh. It was 250s Western for me.
That,
you know what?
That
I'd
shocks
love.
Me. If I woke up with my head sewn to the carpet tomorrow, I wouldn't be more surprised than I am right now.
I was talking to my boss, and he said, "You know what? If they had a fourth season, great. If they ended it on this, that would be great too." Because I thought it was a great ending. Yeah. It was just a peaceful ending.
It sets up that he's going back to doing that. They don't need to advance Grogu into becoming an actual Mandalorian.
No, they were just sitting. He's sitting on the porch with the kid playing in the yard.
Like I said, I'm a jaded, grumpy old man. I have a heart of stone. All right, boys. So we've gotten to the end of the third season. How do we rate the third season of The Mandalorian?
Ooh, this is tough because the beginning of the season was.
It was exciting, and then I got pissed at it, and then I got. It was just a roller coaster of emotions. I'll give it a 3.
Wow.
I'm gonna go higher.
Are we doing it on 5 or 10?
Yeah, 5.
Okay. Oh.
You're doing it at 5? The more I was kind of like following what you said, as the season went on, I got more excited waiting for Wednesday to get here to watch the next episode. So for that, I'm going to give it a 4.
Okay.
Waiting till Wednesday. I watched last night. You know.
Wow. We know you hate Star Wars, Keith.
No, I don't. Well, I don't. I hate Grogu, but I don't hate Star Wars. I actually liked this episode a lot. This actually brought whatever average up. Because, again, I saw it as a kung fu movie.
Fair enough.
So, I'm sorry. I'll give it 3.5.
Okay.
Oh.
I'm going to go 3.5. No, you know what? I'm going to go 4 for just because the fucking Mandalorians retook fucking Mandalore. They're all chatting fucking for Mandalore, and that was fucking as fucking good, and I love me a good save, and when the armor goes, Matt, you know, Lady Kreese, your reinforcements are here. And that was another one where I was like, man, oh man. This one was pretty good. 4 stars for me. We got more Star Wars stuff coming up. Stick with us. The Three Old Geeks are now on YouTube. Check us out there, and don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. If you can't find us, stop by our Facebook page to get a link. And while you're there, drop us a line and let us know what you think of the podcast. Tune in next week, same geek time, on all your favorite apps for all new, all different material. Thanks a lot for listening, and hey, keep on geeking on.